On this week's Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll hear about West Texans who aren't backing down, get an update about the Attorney General's investigation into voter fraud in Hill County, talk to a conservative school board member about fighting back against efforts to do electioneering with school resources, check in with Carrie Cheshire and Texas Scorecard team as they go on the trail, and we'll conclude with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan on why lazy candidates make bad legislators. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Listeners, it's good to be with you. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. This is Texas Scorecard Radio. Let's get started this week with the news roundup. First, let's talk to Lauren Malier out in West Texas. Lauren, you've got an article up about some citizens in Odessa being threatened over an effort to gather petition signatures. Tell us about that.
Hey, Tony. Yes, so there is a group of very active citizens in Odessa that have been unhappy with their city council over this past year and maybe even a little bit longer, but they're taking matters in their own hands and circulating a petition to force the city to call an election in May, where if the election were to be successful, they would add an at-large council seat to the city council and allow the mayor to vote.
Yeah, and so this is something that they can do under the city charter to have a petition and force an election to change their local government, something that's their right. But they're being threatened by some special interest groups who don't like what the result would be.
Yeah, so there's a local League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, that's claiming that this petition is racially motivated.
And so, you know, they're threatening to sue these citizens for kind of exercising their rights under the charter and saying, oh, you know, this is all bad. But they're really just trying to modify how the city council is made up. That seems really crazy. Are the citizens backing down?
No, not at all. They kind of see LULAC's attack as an attack on free speech, so they're moving forward.
Yeah, that's my experience, too. When people are told to stop doing what they're doing, they become even more passionate. Well, that's great. Well, thank you for that report, Lauren. Listeners, check out the full report. Lots more detail there on the website. Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Tony.
Next, let's turn to our new Capitol Bureau Chief, Brandon Waltons, with an update about the Attorney General's investigation into voter fraud in Hill County. Tell us what we found out.
Well, about a year and a half ago, people might remember in Hill County, a grassroots organization, Direct Action Texas, filed some complaints with the Attorney General's office. This was after the total number of voters didn't match up at all with the amount of votes cast
in that county. 2,000 extra votes than voters.
Yes.
Where do these votes come from?
Yes, of course. And it gained a little bit of statewide attention just because there was a close race, of course, with Thomas McNutt. Byron Cook, representative, narrowly defeating him there, gained a lot of attention. Now the Attorney General, about a year and a half later, has released a report and a letter that states that all the errors here are actually from negligence, from human error.
Yeah, they kind of come in and say in the letter, hey, there's violations of the election code here but they couldn't really pin it down on any kind of fraud. The more disturbing thing is they're saying there aren't really safeguards to prevent this kind of stuff in the future.
Exactly. And so the sort of negligence they're talking about are things like not clearing out the voting machines after early voting or not counting absentee ballots or adding people to the wrong list. The more concerning part of this that has a big statewide implications, especially going to the next session, is that this is universally happening everywhere. Another report mentioned in the story says that 249 out of the 254 counties in Texas have these discrepancies in their voter
numbers. Wait, 249
yes.
of 250? Yeah, I saw this in the report that you wrote. It something that the Senate Research Council, the Senate Research people had gone in and looked, and you have these kind of discrepancies happening everywhere.
Yes.
Where you have, you know, basically, look, it's pretty simple. You know, a number of voters show up, they go vote. There's 1,000 voters, it'd be 1,000 votes. It's kind of simple to me, but you're seeing these numbers come in where just way far afield. So is there an answer, a solution to this?
Well, you know, the legislature can absolutely do this, but part of it is that election officials need to take this job more seriously, and they need to make sure that these numbers match up. and citizens have to demand it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think we got to be speaking out and saying, look, party officials,
yes,
county officials, state officials, do your jobs. You know, look at the numbers, make sure that they match. But I think the other takeaway is you got to go vote. You know, yes. you can only steal a close election. And so I'm all for go vote, run up the score, and they won't be able to steal it from you.
Exactly. And sort of the last takeaway there is that people need to go vote, because if we're up against this, you know, we need to make sure we bring everybody to go out to vote. You never know what's going to happen.
That's right. And I appreciate that. Thank you for that report, Brandon.
Yes, thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week Yoram Solomon, a trustee with Plano ISD on the school board there. He's been on the school board for a few years and has some personal experience with an issue we've been talking about for a few weeks here on the program. This effort by the Texas Association of School Boards, by other Educrat organizations to push this so-called culture of voting resolution, which sounds good on the face of it, but creates some problems. Yoram, thank you for being on the program. Tell us about your experience there in Plano.
Hi, Tony. Thank you for having me. Yeah, so this all came up in our November 14th board meeting, and about 3 days ahead of the meeting, we got the packet for the meeting. And as I went through it, all of a sudden, I saw that resolution. It's a one-page resolution. Doesn't say anything about, by the way, coming from the Texas Association of School Board in it. It just, there's a resolution. So I thought it was really local. There was no background to it or anything.
Right.
And fortunately, that weekend, being a member of the National Speakers Association, I ran into Dave Lieber, who's the watchdog reporter for the Dallas Morning News. And he's a friend of mine. And as we were having breakfast, he asked me, so have you all passed that resolution? And I thought, man, how do you know about this? And that's when he told me that this is a statewide effort.
Yeah.
Sure enough.
Yeah. It's something that's being pushed by the Texas Association of School Boards and in league with some other organizations.
Yeah. And so I started digging into that. And, you know, as I read the resolution, I talked to kids a lot in school, outside of school, about voting, about the importance of every person's vote, about how many elections were determined by one vote or even by a zero, by a tie that reached a tie, and how important it is to vote in local elections because, you know, there's probably 5% that show up to local elections. So don't get me wrong, this is important. It is important that people vote. So I started reading the resolution and I thought, wow, this is great. In fact, my first email response was, this is great. But as I keep on reading, I'm starting to get this weird feeling that something is not great about it. And so I sent an email asking to add a line that says, okay, we're going to encourage our employees to vote, but we're not going to influence them how to vote. And the response I got was, well, you need to understand the background to this. That already was kind of suspicious to me. What do you mean I need to understand the background? And sure enough, I started doing my research and I heard from Dave and I gave him some data for his article. Here's an interesting thing. I was elected by 3,797 votes. TISD alone has 6,747 employees. Well, that's almost double the number of votes I got to get elected. So this is a pretty significant vote. But when I start reading through that resolution and he talks about giving employees free time to go and vote, using public transportation, not public transportation, district transportation them there, now it's starting to get weird. Now, there is a link in that resolution to that website that's called, I think, Texas Educators Vote or something like that. And as I go there, this is where we cross the line. Now it's no longer about encouraging people to vote. This is now encouraging people to vote in a certain way.
Right.
And, you know,
and you've got the oath. You know, that's kind of one of the oddest things in this is it's not just this resolution, which, again, as you laid it out, people look at the resolution. They say, oh, let's create a culture of voting. Well, I think everybody really supports that. Everybody, you know, in my kind of neck of the woods here, we support people being more involved. Of course, we want them to be informed. We don't want them blindly going to the polls, but we want people being informed and then going to the polls and letting their voice be heard and influencing government. That's all a good thing. And so you look at it on the face, okay, this is good. And then there's some concerns, okay, there's some electioneering, but then, yes, you get to this website, and they have this oath, we want you to vote, not, you know, just vote or vote your values or vote your conscience. We want you to vote in a very specific way.
And, you know, the very specific way, even that, in my opinion, is a little hidden there, because what they're telling you is we want you to vote, or you take an oath to vote for people who are in support of public education. Well, who defines who's in support of public education? How do you define?
Right.
I'm being told, and I was told many times, that I am against public education. You know, forget the fact that how much money, my personal money that I spent getting elected, how much running a campaign, how much money, how much time I spend on this. And this, I get nothing. In fact, you know, I have two kids. One of them has already graduated. The other one is still in high school in Plano. And I'm not doing this for my daughters. I'm doing this at the expense of my daughters. So how can you tell me that I'm against public education? Oh, because I support school choice. Well, right. This is hidden. When you say people in support of public education, I am in support of public education, and maybe on another show we'll talk about school choice. But that you're starting to steer people, and the districts are creating scorecards for our representatives and senators in Austin. They're creating scorecards on how you voted on certain things, which we stand for XYZ. How did they stand for it? We want them out of office.
All right. And I've seen some of these scorecards from these educator groups, and they're saying, look, this is what we want legislators to do. This is a guy who's pro-public education. Well, the interesting thing is those who are, quote-unquote, pro-public education, by their view, are these very liberal, far-left Democrat candidates and conservative Republican candidates who, you know, want to not only have a great public education system, but might want more parental choice, more parental accountability or accountability to the parents of the districts, and who want to be responsible with taxpayer dollars. Anybody who's for those things and against the cronyism and excess and the waste in education, oh, you're against public education. It becomes very clear the more and more this builds on itself.
That's right. I can spend the next 5 hours of this interview on that, but we don't have 5 hours.
No, we don't.
The biggest concern that I have, here's the biggest concern. So there are state laws and federal laws make this kind of influence an electioneering and spending of taxpayer money on this illegal. Not just illegal, but can carry a sentence of 2 to 10 years in prison.
Wow.
Either state or federal. Our employees don't know that.
Right.
Now, even our policies say that you can't do that, but we have about 1,500 pages of policies. So my biggest concern is we are influencing, we are telling our employees to do something that would put them in a position to break the law, both state and federal. Well, do they know that?
And you know, I'm an attorney, and so I'm familiar with all of the lines, right? It's one of the most horrifying realities of modern politics is the fact that you really do need legal counsel if you're going to engage in the political process in any kind of robust way. And that's not how things are supposed to work. You're not supposed to have to hire a lawyer in order to speak. But nonetheless, that is the reality. There's all these pitfalls in the law. And it's really kind of a little bit terrifying, the idea that you have school boards out there saying, hey, I think this is going to be good for my political interest as a school board member, liberal school board member. I think it's going to be good for my political allies running running for the legislature, running for the Congress, or whatever. I think it would be good for us if these employees are whipped up to go out and do block voting and things like that. But they're depending on these employees knowing very delicate lines of, oh, here's what is appropriate to do on school time, but here's what's not. Here's an opportunity where we can go out and encourage people to vote because we think that they'll vote for who we, you know, want them to vote for. Or, you know, then crossing the line and telling them, hey, you should vote for, you know, vote for Jimmy, you know, or whatever.
Yep.
That's a dangerous concept.
It is. And you brought up an interesting point when you brought up lawyers. In the first meeting, I asked one question at the end after laying out all the laws that this violates. I asked one question. Have our lawyers, our Plano ISD board lawyers, looked at this? The answer was no. When we make a change of one word to policy, Tony, there are at least two lawyers that look at it to approve it. We are about to pass a resolution that violates state and federal laws. Our lawyers didn't even look at it.
Wow. You know, and I think one of the other parts of it if you take this from a teacher's perspective, look, you know, there's a lot of teachers who may not agree with the politics of the bosses, and I think that's a concern. But I think there's also, for those who do, you know, who say, look, I'm a liberal Democrat teacher who wants more liberal Democrats elected, and so I support these efforts to get more people to vote for, you know, liberal Republicans and liberal Democrats. Even if you're coming at it from that perspective, I see this devolving into kind of the machine politics of South Texas. You know, Kino Flores, a state rep down there, was run out of office for bribery, was notorious for running a political machine where, you know, he controlled the school board members and he controlled the local officials and he got them elected. And frankly, if you wanted a job, it was the old patronage system. If you wanted a job at a local school district or you wanted to keep your job at a local school district, you knew you had to have Kino Flores' sign out in your yard, and you better go out and campaign for, you know, his people on the school board. And I think, you know, people, these teachers who are being whipped up to support this stuff need to ask themselves, do we really want to be part of a political machine, or do we want to just go vote our conscience like we always have?
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the interesting thing. You know, the strongest conflicts we currently have in our society, and that's a research that just came out less than a month ago, showed that the highest level of conflict we have is not between black and white, rich and poor, different cities and rural areas, younger, it's between Democrats and Republicans. 86% of people say that the conflicts between Democrats and Republicans are strong or very strong. Actually, 64% say it's very strong.
Right.
This is the strongest divide that we have right now. Today is my birthday, and I'm not saying happy birthday, which you did. Thank you. You know how as I'm answering people who give me all those happy birthday wishes, you know how I determine success? I realize that success is the number of people who disagree with me politically that would say happy birthday.
That is good.
I think we're missing that. So you're right. I mean, doesn't matter if you are liberal, conservative, progressive, Republican, Democrat, anything. Doesn't matter. What's important is when you go to vote, you need to be free of influence. You need to believe that there are not going to be any consequences to how you vote. You need to believe that your vote is going to be confidential. It's up to you to decide if you are going to share or not. And I don't think that's the culture that we're creating. I think that people feel that it doesn't matter how I'm going to vote. I don't know that there might be retribution at some point.
Right. And I think you've really hit the nail on the head. It's we don't want a culture of voting. We want a culture of freedom. And part of freedom is voting, but it's not voting in and of itself. Voting is not is a means to an end. So thank you so much for coming on the program. Thank you for the hard work you're doing standing up for your constituents, for taxpayers, and saying, hey, there really is a problem with this. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Let's turn to Carrie Cheshire, who's out in West Texas on a new segment, On the Trail. Carrie, thanks for calling in and joining us.
Glad to be here, Tony. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. So, new segment we'll be doing for the next month or so. The Texas Scorecard team is out on the trail, so to say, traveling the state, going from district to district, profiling some of the races in the Republican primary. Lately, you've been out in West Texas. Tell us about the areas you've been in.
That's right, Tony. We started up at the Texas Panhandle in the High Plains, checking in on Amarillo-based race Drew Brassfield running against Four Price in the Texas House, House District 87. Four Price, an establishment lawmaker, first elected in 2010. He's really been thought to be House Speaker Joe Strauss's preferred successor in the Texas House, notoriously liberal Republican with a bad record on fiscal and family issues, and as it relates to life. Drew Brassfield's a city manager from a small suburb of Amarillo, about 30 miles to the north, called Fritch. And he's really basing his campaign on, you know, telling the truth about Four Price's record and working hard to earn every vote. And as we talked to him, he had calluses and sores on his hands from driving in T-posts himself, and, you know, was headed from door to door as soon as he could get off work every single day to talk to the voters in the Texas Panhandle and the High Plains about the issues that mattered most to them.
Yeah, I know Price voted against the Schaefer Sanctuary Cities Amendment. This is an amendment to strengthen the sanctuary cities ban. One of the few Republicans to vote against that. Also on the wrong side of a pro-life amendment that dealt with late-term abortions. And it was, you know, I'm kind of curious, how are people resonating with those votes? I know that Brassfield has been talking about them.
That's a good question, Tony. So for most people, it's almost unbelievable that a Republican would vote with Democrats to water down the sanctuary city law or vote with Democrats to stop pro-life efforts to prevent abortion here in the state of Texas. But it's just what Four Price did. And so I think there are a lot of voters who are initially hesitant when they hear the information, but Price has the actual voting record in hand when he's going to the door. And he's saying that it's very, very effective when people can see right there in black and white where Four Price voted with the Democrats against Greg Abbott's amendment on the sanctuary city bill and voted with the Democrats to kill efforts to protect unborn Texans from abortion.
Yeah, and you moved on. The kind of second article you've got up on TexasScorecard.com about the Ken King, Jason Huddleston race. This is another big district, stretches all across the panhandle, and y'all actually got out there and interacted with that one too.
Yes, sir. It's actually a very interesting race because the district is bigger than three states in the Northeast combined. It's
wow.
Bigger than Connecticut, Rhode Island, and a number of other states. It's just such a massive district of 17 counties that forms a stair-step shape from west of Lubbock all the way up north to the Oklahoma border in Perryton. And that's where Jason Huddleston's from. It's a little oil town up in the Texas Panhandle right next to Oklahoma. The closest Walmart is in Liberal, Kansas, to give you an idea of how everything works up here. And he's working hard to earn every vote, but he's combating a lot of fake news from incumbent Republican Ken King, who's one of the most liberal Republicans in the Texas legislature. If you look at Rice University professor Mark Jones, he's the fourth most liberal. If you look at our index, the Fiscal Responsibility Index, which you can find at index.empowertexans.com, he's the sixth most liberal.
Right.
But he's really kind of a big ally of educrats and teacher unions, and that's what he's tried to style his entire legislative approach behind. But right now, he's not really talking about that so much. He's talking about fake news as it relates to his voting record.
Yeah, I know in the article, he kind of went on a radio show there in West Texas and said, oh, no, I wasn't the fourth, and I didn't do this, and I didn't. It's like, guy, you know, we can go check these things out. It's verifiable facts. So very interesting.
It's just bald-faced lies when you look at his record. I mean, he claims that he never voted against border security funding, but he did twice. Once when he voted to support diversity training instead of additional equipment for our DPS troopers at the border, and another where he worked with House leadership to defund the border security efforts by over $100 million.
Wow.
And then his other lie is, you know, as it relates to his voting record. But even his push card, if you go to TexasScorecard.com and read our profile of the race, we go line by line on the issues on his push card and tell what is truth and what is fact and
wow.
what is fiction.
Great. Yeah, no, it's a great profile. Thank you for the report, Carrie. Thank you for being out there on the trail and going from these, you know, race to race. I'm excited about to learn more about these other races that are going on as the month, you know, goes on. I'm excited to have you back next week. For listeners out there, check out all the reports that Carrie and others are publishing. They're going up, you know, almost daily at TexasScorecard.com. You know, in campaigns, just as in other areas of life, work ethic says a lot about a person's character. In this week's commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan tells us more.
This should be accepted as a political maxim. Lazy candidates end up being bad office holders. With a Texas Scorecard radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. It's fashionable to be dismissive of campaigning. The snooty political elites roll their eyes at what they would have us believe are the anachronistic practices of campaigning. You know, things like block walking and pamphleteering and rallies. I'm not sure what they would replace all that with, though. Perhaps the selection of officials by means of their bloodline and pedigree, like the royal houses of old. Maybe some smoke-filled rooms. Perhaps entry to office by right of feats of strength. A good duel to determine the mayorship, perhaps? No, of course not. That's all silly. In fact, political campaigns tell us a lot about the kind of office holder a candidate will be. Let me explain what I mean by that. First, campaigns are nothing if not small business startups with the candidate as both CEO and product. The structure of a campaign can tell you a lot about the candidate's organizational skills. How hands-on are they? Are they a figurehead, or do they roll up their sleeves and take charge? Campaigns can also tell you where the candidate's loyalty does and will rest. You know, do they raise money locally, or are they beholden to insiders that seek to profit off government? More importantly, campaigns can show you how they'll interact with their future employers. Does the candidate go into the neighborhoods to block walk, or host country club events that make voters come to them? Or worse, maybe they do neither. A candidate who won't knock on his neighbor's doors is far more likely to be an office holder who doesn't really want to talk to their constituents. Campaigns tell you a lot about the candidate's actual work ethic. I've seen campaigns where the candidate can't be bothered to spend too much time on their own election. They won't block walk, they won't raise money, they won't attend local clubs. Instead, they send surrogates, if anyone. It's like they just want to be coronated, not elected. You can bet that they will treat an office of public trust in just the same way. Here's a couple specific things to look at when judging the seriousness of a candidate's dedication to representing you. Are they block walking, going door to door, meeting voters one-on-one? Not just their campaign, but the candidate. This speaks to a commitment to speaking with the voters, not just in front of them. Does the candidate list a cell phone number that they actually answer, by the way? This speaks to their accessibility. In the same way, does the candidate utilize social media to both send messages and receive feedback? Is the candidate raising money locally? It doesn't really matter how much money is raised locally, but rather how many local donors the candidate has compared to others in the field or, you know, are people running for a similar office. Look, I get it. It's hard to ask someone for $5 for a campaign. It's even harder to raise $5 from someone, then go and misrepresent them in office and have to face them at the grocery store. Local giving is a great sign that a candidate wants accountability. As citizens, we most definitely must consider the issues the candidate is speaking on, their political philosophy and agenda. But if someone is going to be successful in advancing that platform in office, they must also demonstrate their work ethic. And for all its warts, the genius of the old-fashioned campaign is that it gives you an indication of whether the candidate will fight for you or for themselves. I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Until next week, check out more news and commentary at TexasScorecard.com.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at EmpowerTexans.com.